So again, we come to the component of the supply chain and the functioning of the warehouse. So as we see here, we have the receiving, pre-packaging. Now, typically, looking at the structure, you can understand this is typically, like an e-commerce warehouse. You will see we are not talking so much here about the manufacture or processing or so, but you receive the product, you pre-package the product. Now, generally, pre-packaging is not required, but in very exceptional cases where you find the material is coming in a loose form, like the material is coming in 20 kg bags, and you need to probably palletize before you can put it away in your warehouse, because the loose bags cannot be just kept as it is. There can be a chance of an accident, so you have the pre-packaging stage, then you put it away. So if you have a racking system, then you put it away in one of the racks. You store it there for the time till the material has to be delivered or sold. Then you have the order picking. So assume that you have the order received. The picking of the order occurs, which means that you are basically collecting the material, typically as it happens in e-commerce. Then you have to package the material. Pricing, I'm not so sure, because pricing is decided at the time of the ordering, and this is decided by the sales and the marketing department. So as far as the warehouse is concerned, yes, it could be relating to the labeling, the invoice generation, etc., where the price comes in. So the order is picked. It could be consolidation, because let's say the customer has ordered, for example, somebody ordered a laptop, and then they ordered a bag with that, and then they ordered some accessories. So order picking would be that each of these items from different areas would be picked up and consolidated, and they will be packed in a single pack, so that you are not shipping it as three different pieces, but you do it in a single piece. Sortation and accumulation. So sometimes you need to accumulate the material. At other times, you may have to sort it, separate the material, etc. And then finally, after the packing is done, the outbound packing, then you ship the material. So these are the components. This is a very general model, and as you can see, this is how it applies to e-commerce. Even for manufacturing or a production unit, it will be more or less the same. The only difference will be, that you are also issuing the material to the production. So, what are the other value-added services that warehouses offer? So, light assembly. So, in many places, the warehouse also do some kind of a very simple assembly operations, which do not require very high level of skills, etc. Repair and refurbish. You find many a times that a product, which is either come back from the customer, it needs to be refurbished and then again put as a product for resale. You find in e-commerce many a times that a product is delivered to a customer, and the customer is not satisfied and he returns the product. Okay? Or let's say that he ordered a pair of shoes and the shoe size was either too small or too large, so he will return the material. Now, the material is originally packed in a certain way. When it comes back, it may not be in the same form, so it has to be repaired or refurbished, or maybe it needs some cleaning, polishing, and then repacking it like a fresh product. Quality control and inspection. So many places, like in many organizations, you are doing trading activity. You are sourcing products where you don't do any manufacture activity. You simply check the quality of the product, and then sell the product with your brand. You only relabel the product. So in such a case, the quality assurance, which may include insurance, inspection, etc., so this is carried out by the warehouse because it does not have to go to the production unit. In-transit merge. So again, this is a e-commerce concept where let's say there are two or three items which are ordered, you may actually merge them along the way. So there are three warehouses from where the material comes, they come to one particular place, they are merged into a single assembly. This also happens with capital equipment, where you have a large equipment where there are various components. So for example, it's a chemical plant where you have compressors, you have refrigeration unit, you have the reactors, and they are coming from different places. Now you may have a in-transit merge where the supplier will ensure that they come from different units or different vendors, they are merged in one place, and then they are shipped out as a single consignment. Kitting is what we saw in case of the e-commerce example. You are three items are ordered, you put them all together, so you make a kind of a kit you combine it into a single consignment. Cutting, where you may be actually splitting the material, you have received, let's say, a bulk packing, and then you have to ship out only part of the material. So then in such a case, as in case of steel, etc. So steel comes in the form of big rods or something, and many a times you have to cut it to a particular length or particular size, and then you have to supply the material to the customer. So cutting may be where you are receiving the material as a bulk, but you are dispensing or selling the product in smaller units. Labeling and tagging, obviously, because you need to label the product for its specifications, product name, shelf life, manufacturing date, whatever. Also tagging, because in my organization we typically have one product label which gives everything about the product name, the manufacturing date, expiry date, various things. And there is one more label which carries all the information of the buyer. That means which is the transport it has to go through, who is the customer who is buying it. Because if we are going to give it the material to the transporter, even the transporter should be able to identify that this product or this material is destined for which place and who is the customer. And specialty packaging, so there could be some special requirement. If it's a fragile material, it requires a very special kind of a packaging, or it could be simply a consolidation, like you see in the case of e-commerce. You have the product package, which is a very small package, but then they have a large outer packing with some padding, etc., to ensure that in the normal handling, the product will not suffer any damages. So the economic benefits of warehouse. So four basic economic benefits of the warehouse. What are they? So consolidation and break bulk. So consolidation is where you consolidate various things we discussed. Either it could be different components ordered by the customer, you bring it together. So typically, in my industry, we are selling specialty chemicals, and a customer will order at any given point of time three or four chemicals. So when we have to make it a full truckload, it's consisting of a certain volume of one product, certain volume of another product. So you first need to pick the product once you receive the order, and you have to consolidate. Once you consolidate, then you load it on a truck or a vehicle. So that is consolidation. Break bulk is basically what we talked about, bulk material which has to be broken into sellable units. So we talked about cutting in the previous slide. Break bulk is something similar, where you have material which is in a bulk form, and then at the time of shipment it has to be cut or made to size as per the customer requirement. Sorting, seasonal storage. Seasonal storage is, many a times you have a plant where the capacity is limited and you have a seasonal requirement. So you have high demand in certain seasons and then low demand in other seasons. Now what you do is, in such case, you produce the material at a constant rate. And when there is a lean season, you are actually building up the stocks, which can be then used during the peak season. So seasonal storage is, you know, to meet with the seasonal fluctuations. Reverse logistics is typically, you know, when goods are returned by the customer. So we talked about the e-commerce example where, you know, people return the material. So warehouse is the point where the material normally comes to. And either it will be refurbished or it can be discarded if there is a major defect or so. If it can be rectified, it can be rectified and then again added to the sellable inventory. So these are the benefits of, you know, having a warehouse. Coming to the stores, so virtually every enterprise needs to hold some stocks of items and materials. Typically, what are the components, you know, or the activities a store performs? So you, receiving the item, quantity verification, so like you have received ball bearings or maybe some of the spares. So there will be a verification of the numbers, then the inspection to see whether the quality meets the specified requirement or your internal specifications. Preservation of the items and material. And as I said, you know, stores are generally for the consumables and for spares, etc., where sometimes you don't know how long the material is going to lie. If you're going to have ball bearings, if there is a breakdown, it could be used up immediately, or it could be lying, you know, in your storage for 6 months, 1 year, right? So preservation has to be ensured. So I take the example of ball bearings. If you do not preserve the ball bearings correctly, they can get rusted. And once they get rusted, they lose the utility. So preservation is an important part of the store's function. And the other risk that you run is, you know, pilferage and theft or damage to the material. Damage could be, you know, because of, you know, any breakage, because of falling or improper storage, or, you know, you're storing too many things one above the other. So you need to protect against this. So the other things that the store does is item insurance. So when the requirement arises, a purchase requisition is generated and the store will issue the material against the purchase requisition. Maintain the required inventory. So in terms of spares, you don't have a very elaborate system like a production planning and master production schedule. You generally have certain policies and certain guidelines and certain rules. So you may have a minimum order quantity and a minimum stock level, etc. So once the inventory reduces to a certain level, a fresh requisition will be generated by the system and you will be ordering the material and replenishing the stocks. The reason is because, you know, the consumption of these items may not always be very predictable. Maintaining the records of the movement. So things like to whom the material was issued, which department, which function, which cost center, and what was the quantity issued. This could also be, you know, required for subsequent analysis as to where you have a very frequent failure of certain components, etc. Ensuring that orders and reorders are made in time. So we talked about, you know, the reorder levels or the economic order quantities, etc. So these are the functions of the store. There are people who review these policies from time to time, and basically the store's responsibility to see that the once the level comes to the reorder level, they are ordered in time so that there is never an instance where, you know, you require the material and it's not available, because it could result in stoppage of equipment or production, etc. Ensuring that productive utilization of the store space is maximum. So when you say productive utilization, it's a very loaded word. You can have a lot of obsolete material lying. You can have a lot of non-moving material lying. The stores, one of the function is to ensure that products which are fast moving. So as we talked about, you know, the store is used for, you know, consumables. So there will be some protective equipment or some tools, etc., which are required. You always store maximum amount of material which are fast moving. and you don't use the store for material which are, you know, non-moving or which are simply blocking this space, not just the space but also the working capital. So what are the kind of stores that you have? So you have the dedicated storage, you have the randomized storage, and you have the class-based storage. So I'm sorry, yeah. Dedicated storage will be, you know, where you have a store which is dedicated for some kind of a particular kind of a material. So take the example of let's say certain materials or certain products like pharmaceuticals. Now they have to be stored at a certain kind of a temperature. There could be a dedicated storage, because even in pharma there are various categories. So in the cold chain, certain products have to be maintained between a temperature range of 15 to 20. Certain products have to be maintained below 0 degrees centigrade, or between 0 and 4 degrees. So when you say dedicated storage, it is specific to a particular kind of material. Or even, like, for example, if you're talking of a store where the automobile engines are stored, the racks, etc., may be designed in such a way that it will hold the engine and it will allow a very efficient storage without any damage, etc. Randomized storage will be, you know, where you can keep the material anywhere depending upon the availability of the storage. So typically, you know, you have the bins, and then or you may have a racking system also, and you can keep the material wherever you like, wherever there is a empty space. And the class-based storage is in the industry, like in especially the chemical industry, you have certain hazardous chemicals, you have certain dangerous chemicals. They could be inflammable, they could be toxic, they could be poisonous, they could be highly oxidizing in nature. So then you have a very dedicated class-based storage. So if you have to keep the inflammable material, it has to be in a particular kind of a store where there is a special kind of a firefighting equipment installed, detectors are installed. Class-based also could be, you know, like when you are storing certain solvents, it could be stored in a tank. But then, you know, it has certain special provisions depending upon the hazard or the risk that you carry. So these are the various kind of storage that we typically have. So we now come to the next component, which is transportation and the physical distribution. So physical distribution is concerned with the getting the products, the finished goods, getting the products, raw materials, components, right from the supplier, right up to the end customer. So depending upon the type of goods being moved, the transportation may account for as much as 40% of the total cost. And this is a fact, because the major component, if you look at in the logistics, is your transport cost, which could be either your dedicated transportation or it could be a third party, right? And physical distribution is served by a huge private transportation industry. Typically, as you can see in India, the trucks are all privately owned. Even sometimes when you look at the big companies, you know, transport companies, they are basically not owning all the trucks. The trucks are owned by individual truck owners, and there are brokers through whom the truck companies actually hire the trucks, or they negotiate the rate, and they will charge the industry a certain rate for transporting material on a full truckload basis. So we are talking of the private transportation industry, so which is trucks, a railroad. In India, of course, railroad is governed by the government, the central government, and the railway ministry. Already there are some private trains, so we don't know if in future even the railroad, there will be certain private players who are playing an important role there. Pipeline is another method of transporting the material. Generally, this is used not for very long distances, but in case of transportation of gas or liquids, pipelines are used. Barges, you know, for things like iron ore, etc., barges are being used because they are one of the cheapest, you know, modes of transportation, and of course aircraft. But aircrafts are generally, you know, either you have a urgency or you have a very high value component where the transportation cost is not very significant. So where you have high value products, sometimes it doesn't make sense to hold the inventory, and you bring the material by air as and when required. We'll see some examples of those also. So because of the delay in supply chain may lead to higher inventory levels and increased total cost. The whole logistics process is viewed as an area where cost avoidance and cost reduction will reap bottom line rewards. So this is what we talked about, you know. If you have high lead times, then you will require higher inventory. Let us say that you have an affiliate which is supplying the engine assemblies, and they are assembling all kind of engines, petrol, diesel, variants, hybrid. Now the lead time from your affiliate to, let's say, the assembly plant is 1 week. Now you will have to hold certain inventory depending upon the kind of demand variation that you normally see. Now imagine that instead of 1 week, if the lead time between the two plants was just 1 day, the inventory that you hold will be much less, because any change in the demand or any sudden spurt in the demand can be quickly met by the affiliate, by the upstream plant. So the lead time plays a very important role in the inventory. Why do you hold inventory? Inventory guards you against two things. One, the variation in the demand. You need to hold the inventory. If the inventory, the demand was very predictable, then you could align your supplies either from the supplier or from your affiliate in a very predictable manner. So if I require, let's say, 100 engines per day, then I can say that, okay, you will deliver 100 engines of this configuration every day. And I don't need to keep maybe inventory beyond half a day or so. But why I need to keep the inventory is if there is a variation. So today I require 100, tomorrow I may require 120, day after it may be 80. So I require certain inventory to take care of any sudden spurt. So higher the variability, higher will be the inventory required. The other important part is, what is the time it takes me to replenish the levels? So I have a spurt in the demand, I have a surge in the demand, and then I want to cater to that demand. How quickly can I get the material in? And that would depend upon, again, the lead time. And the lead time is not just the time it takes the vendor to make the material, but make the material and supply it at my unit. So inventory, again, I just go through this. So because of delays in the supply chain may lead to higher inventory. So the key word is, if there is a delay, if your lead times are long, then it will lead to a higher inventory. Key word here is, that means you have to have a supply chain, the transportation and the distribution should be taking the minimum time. Also, you know, if you're increasing the inventory, your cost is going to go up, because as we have seen, that inventory is nothing but your working capital. So higher the inventory, higher the working capital you are locking up in your system. Lower the inventory, more lean is your organization. So the whole logistics process is to be viewed as an area where cost avoidance and cost reduction will reap bottom line rewards. Message is very clear. You have to have short lead times, you have to have short transit times, in order to keep your inventory levels low. Transportation buyer must select among the two basic criteria, price and service. Why we say price and service? Because these both add to the cost. Just to give an example, e-commerce companies initially used to transport a lot of their material or distribute the material by air. So you find that many of the electronic items, etc., the wholesalers are all located in Delhi, in or around Delhi. And if you wanted the material in Mumbai, then they would actually book the material by air. And that would take, say, about a day or two, because many times the airlines have a cooling period, which means after you book the material for few hours or maybe a day, the material will not be put on an aircraft. And then it takes hardly a couple of hours for the material to actually be transported here. Today, there are transporters who run services between, let's say, Delhi and Bombay, where they deliver goods within 24 hours. And mind you, here the price is much lower as compared to the air transportation. So it's important that you are looking at the service level and the price, and both have to be seen together. So you know that many times even the e-commerce companies, they charge you extra for a quicker delivery, same day delivery or the next day delivery, etc. And if you're not paying a premium or you're not a Prime member or so, then you will get the material after 3 or 4 days. So price and service are two important criteria for selection. Shipment over water is the cheapest and usually the slowest to ship. So we talked about the example of barge. The other example is the ocean freight. All the global shipments, or the global supply chain heavily depend upon the sea shipments. Few exceptions are there. So as in case of the electronic industry, this falls under the category where the cost or the value of the material is very high, and the air freight cost is a small component of the total cost. So here, rather than holding inventory, people would rather have the material shipped by air, so that you are not holding inventory, you don't have the risk of any obsolescence or a material which are lying, which are not moving, slow movers, non-movers. Ideal example, Dell computers, they always advertise that they actually start assembling the machine once they receive the order. So typically what we understand is that they don't keep any inventories, and they bring in all their components, all the materials by air, because the components are very small. When you look at the air freight cost, it is not that significant, but there is a major saving because you are not holding the inventory. You don't have an inventory carrying cost. And again, the example that I explained to you, you are, let's say, getting a credit from your vendor for a certain number of days, but you are selling the product, as in case of Dell, you make the payment and then your machine starts assembling. So they have already taken the money from you, and they are also going to use the credit line from the vendor, which means the entire operation, the entire business is running on the vendor and the customer's finances. So in strategic cases, you are using air as a transport mode. Pipeline is the lowest cost overland. But then, as I said, pipeline also has certain risk. The maintenance of the pipelines, you need a dedicated force. There can be pilferage, etc. And it cannot be for very long distances. There are some exceptions where there are under the sea pipelines for certain fluids, I would put it as, but these are exceptions. So what are the components of the transportation cycle or the transportation cycle, the as a component of the supply chain? So typical, the steps are: receive the order, create a shipment, create a load. So create a shipment means the moment you receive your order, behind the, in the back office, normally they have a delivery order created against the order. Delivery order can be created only if you have these stocks. So when a delivery order is created, it is created for a specific batch, specific material as per the order. So then a shipment is created. And if there are a multiple of items, then these are all consolidated. So this is where you call it create a load. And then you assign a carrier. This is what we discussed a little while ago of how, you know, they in the chemical industry, they consolidate, you know, the different products which are on order. So you create a load, you assign a carrier to load, then you schedule a pickup. So either it can be that you have a captive transporter who delivers the material to the nominated carrier, or you schedule a pickup from the carrier which has been chosen by the customer. You create the delivery documents, so typically the invoice, packing list, and you know, now in India, if you look at, you also have the e-way bill, etc., and then you have the e-invoice. In transit tracking and resolve exceptions. So in many cases, as you can see in e-commerce, people expect to track their shipment. You know, they want to know at any given point of time where their shipment is. Even for certain very critical kind of shipment in pharmaceuticals and, you know, in the cold chain, people wish to know where the shipment is. And there are certain hardware available where it will tell you at any given point of time based on the GPS where the material is. So even if it's on the road, you exactly know where it is. To the extent that there are hardware available which will also tell you, like in case of a cold chain, what is the temperature which is maintained in the carrier at that particular point of time. Delivery confirmation. So once the material is delivered, you must have seen in e-commerce, normally they you know, record the delivery. So the moment the material is delivered, you will get a message saying that your parcel has been delivered. So the delivery confirmation, this is also required for the company to you know, note that the parcel has been delivered, and also whether it confirms with the service level which have been agreed. Some places where you have to deliver within a stipulated time, for that also delivery confirmation is required. And then the freight payment is made, because if you have a tie-up with the logistics partner, then the freight is paid afterwards. And you also then capture this information for the carrier performance. So what we were talking about, the delivery confirmation of proof or proof of delivery. So you are looking at what is the time it takes, how many exceptions were there, how many failures were there, and you can then even rate the transporter. So this is a typical, you know, cycle that transportation follows.